And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. Cheddar and JJ are with me here in studio. Nice to have two of you in studio for a change, lads. Usually one of you is hidden on the phone, or Cheddar, you'd be hidden, or someone is hidden. But we've three in the studio here now, lads, so we can all make eye contact and it can be a much better dynamic. Want to talk, lads, by talking about the Club Players Association motion, right? And this was in the news this week because the Cork County Board has rejected it. They've gone public and they've had a vote and they're going to vote no for this motion. And the motion, all the motion is that when a delegate goes to Congress and it gets its mandate from the county board, that their vote is made public so that they can't do a solo run, and maybe if they have strong views themselves, vote the way they want to vote rather than vote the way the county board has mandated them to vote. And the clubs really have the power to give to influence the county board meeting if, you know, their committee meetings are ran before and send their delegate to the county board meeting. But anyways, the Cork County Board have said that they don't want this. And Tracy Kennedy, who's the Cork chairperson, has said, if my club can't trust me to vote the way they ask me, what am I doing here? Similarly, if the board can't trust us, what are we doing here? But I don't know if that should be personalised in that way. I don't think it's necessarily trusting an individual delegate who might be honourable. It's trusting 32 delegates and not knowing, maybe there could be a few of them in there that might not vote honourably, Cheddar. I'm not too sure what way, how Cork could come down on not wanting transparency for this.
I think I'd agree with that, Willie. I think there's a number of aspects to that, really. First of all, the technology is there now to be able to do this very, very easily, in terms of, look, you can even get up your phone now and you can vote by buttons on your phone and that. So the technology is there to be able to do this very, very, very quickly. I think the next piece that we need to look at is the transparency. And I think it would be very, very helpful to know, you know, who was behind things and who wasn't. But particularly if somebody was mandated to do something, that they actually did that. And I think there are some anomalies in the past that sort of, you know, rose some questions around this, even though it might be difficult to gather the evidence on that.
Yeah.
I think the last point is also important, though. And I do know Tracy, and Tracy is a very, very pragmatic, very experienced person. And I think you do need to look at the trust issue, and you do need to address that. And I think just, you know, communicate with people that you can say, look, this is a more open way, a more open medium of doing our business here. We're not distrusting anybody. And at the end of the day, if you're mandated to do something, it's not your opinion as such. You're just simply bringing the information that your club or your county was asked, that you were asked to do. So I don't think there's any danger there to anybody. And I really don't see any danger in this. But I do think, I take Tracy's point, I do think you need to address the trust issue and explain that to people.
I think and I do need to mention to Tracy, the reason I'm kind of disappointed with Tracy is that I've had dealings with her as well, and she's been top class. And like Frank Murphy, who you could almost set your clock by going against this, that was no surprise. So I was more surprised Tracy spoke against it than Frank, because we know, and Frank was making comments like, we know where this motion is coming from, it's coming from that crowd.
Right,
and you know,
right,
this kind of county board attitude towards players sometimes and towards the CPA. And if this seems so logical to me, but because maybe Frank sees the CPA as whippersnappers that might threaten, you know, kind of his county board, maybe he's just going to vote no for it anyways.
Yeah, but it shouldn't really make a difference where it comes from. Once it's a good idea, and again, from a guy that is not involved in any club delegates or any club committees, I'd like to see actually what my club was actually voting on. And then if I don't agree with that, right, okay, then I can get involved in my club and say, right, no, I'd rather go A, B and C and have a debate about it within the club. And then that's only going to come from transparency. And if it is actually a valid point that you're actually willing to fight for and your club is not backing it, well, you can voice your opinion then, like, you know what I mean. But I can't see an issue in any organisation, whether it be a business organisation or a sport organisation, that it can't be transparent that what people voted, like, in what different application. Because as what Director is saying, it's not a personal opinion, it should be from the club's opinion. And then if you guys are not aware of their club's stance on a particular point, why not have an argument within a debate within that club?
Yeah.
And might be able to change your mind. But if you don't know what way your club is actually voting, what's going to change? You know what I mean? And just because this motion has been in there for the last 20 or 30 years, that doesn't make it right either. You have to be open to new points of view. And again, the way things are going as well, it's a lot more open. The GAA, it has to be a lot more open as well. Like when it comes to stuff like this and county board and delegates, club delegates as well, it has to be wide open and it has to be transparent for players to see.
The thing about this is that when you start personalising it and talk about trust, it's like individuals, their noses can be put out of joint. But like we all know how GAA politics work, lads. I gave this example on the football show because we talked about this on that as well. And Kieran Levy, Cheddar, was going for Laois County Board Chairman recently. And I was talking to him not long before the vote. It was on the Monday night. And he says, Wooly, I have a backing from a whole load of lads around the county. I think I'm going to win this. So he was promised all these votes from clubs that were going to be at it. Then the vote comes and he's nowhere near winning it. So like, not, it was close enough, but people lie in the GAA. That's GAA politics. So instead of having these whispers and accusations and rumours and all these kind of talking, how can the Cork County Board stand over not wanting to put a stop to this?
I think that's a different issue, though. I think it's just not as formal an issue as the example that you've quoted, Bully. I think this is a very, very formal issue. And I suppose I would ask, if this proposal was to come from GAA headquarters or from one of the councillors or something like that, I think you'd probably find broad support for it in terms of its transparency and that. And I think there's a little bit of that. Where has it come from? And you know, what's the agenda here? And I genuinely can't see an agenda here other than people be clear, you know, what they're voting and what they did actually vote for. I genuinely don't think there's an issue about trust here. People are just asked to do a job and fulfill the role of these meetings, and they simply vote. It's not their own opinion or anything like that. But I think it would really, really help if it was clear, you know, who what people did vote for and who they voted for.
Yeah, no, definitely. Let's hope other county boards don't go along the way Cork did. There's no doubt about that, because let's hope this one gets pushed through. Left-handed catchers, JJ, I wanted to bring this one up on this show because Brendan Bugler surprised me on Monday. I'm not a hurling man, so this is always an education.
You're learning all the time. Every day is a school day, Willie.
I'm not a hurling snob. I'm get educated on this show. And Bugler started talking about he marked Pat Cronin in 2008, and he gave him an awful roasting because he wasn't used. All the Clare lads are right-handers, and he wasn't used to marking a left-hander. So he roasted him, and then he marked him again in the final in 2013, and he got on an awful lot better with him because he actually thought about it and had to kind of judge how to do it. And an interesting one, I was talking to Tony Brown yesterday, right? And I would mention this to him, and he said Tony might do a bit of work on the podcast in the future, but he was telling me that in one of the years he was going marking a left-hander. I think it was against Kilkenny. Is Owen Larkin a left-hander?
Owen Larkin, yeah.
Something like that. And he said that he went to the manager and says, I want to mark left-handers in training. So he marked Kevin Moran in training. He marked every left-hander that was on the Waterford panel in preparation to mark this left-hander. And it just blows my mind that I didn't even know this existed in hurling. But you were the left-handers and you were brilliant in the air. So this is why you were brilliant in the air.
That's
right?
The only reason it was just left-handed. I heard the podcast there on Monday and the lads were saying, the left-handers are very awkward to mark right now. But it's just maybe we're just better hurlers than the right-handed lads. You know what I mean? We'll start a debate here and there. But
is it just the fact that lads are not used to it? How many left-handers would be on a squad? Like, not that many, or?
Well, you're going to have to get JJ to give away some of his secrets here now, sir.
And Tommy Walsh and all, but Tommy would have been
Tommy right-handed as well, right-handed. Yeah. But I know exactly where it comes from, because as a defender, you're probably always going to be goal side of your opponent when the puck is coming down. So once you're a left-handed hurler, like, you can actually have your body width away from where the ball is. So their catching hand would be on their left hand, so you could actually push your left away from there, and then you could actually, because when the ball comes into my right hand, then your man is body width away from me, so I can just push away and then push off, you know. So when you come across, I actually find marking left-handed hurlers myself very awkward as well, because again, you wouldn't be used to it in regarding, because you just have to go back. You have to kind of get your positional body. You always go back to what your tried and tested routine is when puck is coming down. You haven't time to think of what's going to happen. You just put your body position in the right place, what you've done for the last probably 10-15 years. And then if this lad is upsetting you, you're kind of saying, right, you're thinking about it a bit too much, then you have to go over to the other side of it then. And if the ball breaks back into the middle, he could go run straight through, and then you're through on goal as well. So it's a case of either spoiling him or and be be best for the team, or else you can go around the other side and try and catch it off him. But you don't, it's all or nothing then, because if he catches it, he's gone straight through there, right, as well. So it is a tricky one, to be fair. It is a very, very tricky one. But yeah, I'd see what the lads are saying regarding just different body positions, different areas. Do you stand at the right or do you stand at the left? So it's all about where the ball is coming back as well, you know.
Yeah,
I think JJ has explained it very, very well there. I think it depends on the position that the player is playing on the field again. Obviously, if he's on the wing, and JJ has explained it well, and you're marking him at your strong side, obviously you're on the wrong side of him, and if he breaks through, then he's a straight run on goal. I think a lot of it's to do too, it's not, you don't practice it that often, and you know, you don't get a chance to actually rehearse it yourself in training, and definitely understand where Tony Brown is coming from. And I think it's your body position really, as JJ has explained, but it's also your body position in the tackle or in the hook. You're on the wrong side for a left hander if he's going away from you and that, and it's just awkward that you haven't really rehearsed it and practiced it before, and you know, they can get the upper hand on you. I think the other side of that is, I think in the kitchen, you know, you have a little bit of an advantage yourself in the kitchen as well. You know, you can shield the ball maybe a little bit better, again depending on the position that you're on, or you can try the JJ Delaney method. You can stick the arm around his neck and hold him down
and hope for the best,
and get hold of Joe Rabbit and all of these hooks, 6'4" or 5 forwards, and grab the ball.
You know, Cheddar Damien Hayes on the podcast lifted a lid on JJ Delaney, that he's seen as this ball-playing fullback, and Damien Hayes said this was not the case at all.
I don't think there's a ball-playing fullback out in the country there today. I've never seen one since that.
But the thing in the air is interesting to me, because I know from playing Gaelic football, I was never good in the air. I just didn't have... I always think fetching in Gaelic football is a God-given talent, and I'm wondering, is it the same in hurling, or is it something you can work at, JJ? Because you obviously were known well for being so good in the air. Is it something you worked on, or something you just had?
It's something that a bit of both, to be honest with you. It's about really timing. You don't have to be the biggest guy in the world or anything like that, but if you time the ball right and get the ball at the highest point, you have a huge advantage over it. And especially as a back, your forward really is going to be standing under the ball there as well. So if you can actually time your run, and just when the ball is coming, kind of, you know, nudge forward, nudge the forwards back of the helmet or the hurl, even when they have the hurl up in the air. But the thing is, when you do that, you have to win the ball cleanly in the air. If you don't win the ball cleanly in the air, it's going to be a free straight away. But the kind of referee kind of gets kind of wound up in the big cheer of the crowd, really, when you do catch the ball. It could be a foul now and again, but
right. So if you don't catch it, it could be a foul. If you catch it, the emotion, the cheer will kind of
the whole thing will come up, and then you're gone with the ball as quickly as possible as well, and just kind of play on, you know. But it is about time. But again, when you're in training now, and you have to practice it every opportunity you get there as well. Even poking around before training, you're trying to go up and meet the ball at the highest possible point. That's why you're trying to say to young lads as well, in their 14, 16s, don't wait for the ball to come. Go up and
staying on your feet is no good.
You have to get off the ground, because again, if you're 5'11", you're backing that 6'3" or 6'4", you're not going to win the ball if you don't get off the ground. And if you can get off the ground, well, a lot of bigger players as well actually don't jump off the ground either, because they're so used to winning. They don't have to. They're so used to winning high ball there as well. So if you can just kind of practice that as much as you can, and that's completely done. You can do it against a ball against the wall, and you can just up and attack the ball at highest point there again. So again, that's what we're saying to young lads as well, like, just kind of keep on practicing that as well, because again, you don't have to be the biggest guy in the world, just timing is huge, and so it is. Yeah, confidence
you,
as well.
You wouldn't have had to get off the ground too much, Cheddar, with the height of you.
I know. I think just on the technical parts of it, look, JJ set it out really, really clearly here. Your footwork, your timing is just critical to that. You're meeting the ball at the highest point, and look, in all of that action, you're going to nudge the forward, probably forward a little bit as well, just to clear the space for you to catch it. And look, there is no better player. Certainly in my time, I've never seen a better catcher, a left-handed catcher, than the man beside me here. So I think, you know, anybody who's listening to this show should really pay attention to what he's saying in terms of how to deal with this.
Yeah, and did you know that we never would have saw him at full back? Only Connerly Hand cleaned him it was a league game.
League
when
game
he was wing back,
yeah,
and
yeah,
he would.
Yeah.
Cody says, "Here, you've enough of that." I think you said it to Cody here.
Cody said it to me.
I might try out that full back position.
I wasn't going to look at Cody just in case he gave me the curly finger and I was going off the line, but he gave me one more chance and put me back into full back line. So I was happy enough with that, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I heard that story completely different. Actually, I heard that JJ really wanted to test himself at full back, that he'd started done enough as a wing back, and that he wanted to test himself at
new
full
challenge.
Back, that's why he went in there.
You learn something new in this show all the time. It was actually
JJ. Yeah, test me set trying to run after Connerly Hahn, and I failed that test miserably, to be honest.
There's a lot of lads failing that test. at the moment. Mira, I wanted to mention something Brendan Cummins said. It was on League Sunday the other night, and he criticised Pat Gilroy, and he was talking about bringing back Conal Keeley and Alan Nolan in the goals. And it's just like, I mean, I'm not criticising Brendan Cummins. It's more you can't win as a manager, because last year Cunningham got criticised for getting rid of the old lads and going with too many young lads, and now this year Pat Gilroy brings them back in and now it's not going too well, and he's going to get criticised potentially for that. So like, I mean, our narratives and analysis formed on how a team is going rather than what's the bigger picture here. And to me it looked like bringing these older lads back in was the right thing to do, because you need experience, and Cunningham got rid of too many of them. And losing the first three games shouldn't maybe kind of change that, JJ?
Yeah, I think so, because look, again, it's very, very reactive the first couple of games, and if it's got a result in the first couple of games we probably wouldn't be speaking about it now at the moment. But he probably, look, again, knowing Pat Gilroy, he'd do a lot of research before he took this job on, and he didn't make that decision very lightly just to say, oh yeah, I'll bring back the older lads now and that'll solve the whole problem. He won't be that naive coming into the management structure like that either. Like, so I'm presuming there's a method to his madness. Earlier on in the year, probably no harm to have the likes of Conal Keeney now and Joey Boland, these guys are physically strong,
yeah,
and be able to hold it. And maybe he knew that a lot of these players would be hurling Fitzgibbon as well, and they wouldn't be available for the first three or four games, because if they weren't there, they could have shipped a lot more heavier defeats, because with the guys that were missing from the Fitzgibbon, and they will be missing there again this weekend. So it's a case of, look, he had to, probably has a plan in place for the league and plan in place for the Leinster Championship and the Championship after that then as well. But look, he would have rather have a couple of results, especially the Offaly one at the start. He would probably target that for a win. When that didn't happen, then he'd probably be panicking a small bit, you know. But again, it is reactive. We're reacting from week to week and regarding results to results. But I'd give him benefit of doubt, because he hasn't had his full 15. He didn't pick his strongest team. He hasn't available to him in regard to Fitzgibbon injuries now and everything like that as well. So you can only judge a guy at the end of the year really more than anything. And look, he's in his own mind. He's after making the right decision so far, and he'll back himself now for the year too.
Yeah, so he brought in loads of fellas back in, because last year Cunningham in the Championship, Cheddar only played three fellas that won the Leinster in 2013. Now that's only 5 years ago, so that was a huge turnover of a successful team, which he was criticised for. So Gilroy brings in back in Nolan, he brings in Peter Kelly, Shane Durkin, Paul Ryan, Danny Sutcliffe, Johnny McCaffrey, Dara Plunkett, Conal Keeney, Joey Boland, brought all these fellas back in, and it seemed like the right thing to do at the start of the year. I don't think, should the three results change that now?
Look, the first thing I'd say is, I suppose we don't know what goes on inside in the Dublin camp, and it's, you know, it's unfair to comment on it. But so if we were to give just an arm's length comment on that, Pat Gilroy is a very, very experienced man. It's been through the mill before, albeit in football. And I think JJ is right. He certainly would have done a lot of analysis on this in terms of what he needs within the team. And at this minute, and probably for the last number of years, Dublin needed some ball winners. And certainly within Dublin, Conal Keeney was the best ball winner for a long, long time in Dublin hurling. So he may have immediate priorities in that, with games coming up that he needs to test out. But he could be also looking at, you know, what do these players have to offer here? And I need to find that out early. So there could be a variety of reasons that Pat is looking at here,
yeah,
in terms of trying some of these players. But you got to bear in mind that some of these players are serious, serious players. You know, Danny Sutcliffe or any of these players would walk onto any team in the country. So he has got to find that out early. Do they still have the hunger and the ambition to drive on for this? And he's the only man that can answer that, because he sees it every night in training.
But the one point I'll just make on this before I move off it is that I think the easiest thing for a manager to come in and do is get rid of older lads, bring in young lads and say, I'm building for the future. It buys yourself 3 or 4 years. Like, I mean, the hardest thing for Pat Gilroy to do is to bring back these lads as, you know, fellas who it'd be easy just drop them, because we know when you get into your 30s, if you have a bad game, you're done. You know that kind of way, and that's just the reality of it. But I thought it was a brave thing to bring all these fellas back in, and it's not like he's trying to buy himself the years. Like I said, I thought Cunningham potentially could have been doing that in his last year by going, I'm building for the future, and suddenly then you're on a 3 year plan. You know what I mean? And I see a lot of managers doing that at the expense, maybe, maybe of short term success, but Gilroy didn't go down that road.
No, he didn't, know, and probably, I suppose we spoke about this time last year, and probably we were saying Cunningham was doing a great job for the next Dublin manager, getting going, kind of blooding a lot of these younger players as well. Yeah. But obviously, look, again, he has his homework done, and he probably travelled down a couple of the club matches within Dublin and probably seen what was there, and he needed these experienced guys in there as well. But look, again, if I was a player on the Dublin panel, I'd like to see these five or six guys coming in. Will they be all playing come championship? I don't think so, but probably two or three of them will be starting, and a couple more of them will come on. Look, it's competition, it's healthy competition for the Dublin panel there as well. I don't think Dublin are in a place now that can get rid of these guys straight away and forget about like Paul Ryan and Johnny McCaffrey, Joey Boland. Like, these are they've tried and tested now in come championship hurling for Dublin as well. So if not, they're going to drive on training, and it's going, if you're starting on the Dublin team, you're going to earn your place because you're going to get it in front of these guys as well. So look, again, we're judging on probably three league games. They're probably training very, very hard as well. So we don't know what kind of training they're doing. They could be training every night of the week before the league. We don't know, yeah. You know, and settle for the Leinster Championship,
the Leinster League, which is another league. Like, he could have his eye on the bigger prize.
They'll be targeting Kilkenny in the first game in that Leinster League as well, up in Dublin as well. That'll be a huge game for them, because if they win that, that could set off their Leinster League as well. Like, you know, so maybe they're looking at a bigger picture and they're not too worried about the league, you know. But again, he would have been happier now if he had a couple of wins under his belt now as well. Like, you know, I suppose, again, come back to it, the Offaly match was a kind of one that he wasn't expecting, I'd say, more than anything.
Yeah, it was an embarrassing one. It's just a quick one I want to mention to you lads, because I mentioned this on the football show as well, and we criticise the GAA. I do a lot on this show, and only because I think it's warranted, and I think they deserve praise when credit is due as well. And it looks like Congress is going to endorse a ban on bookmaker sponsorship in Croke Park this Saturday. It proposes to prohibit sponsorship of betting companies on any GAA competition, any team, or any playing gear facility. And I reckon that this is going to be passed at Congress. And I was using the example of the English soccer teams on the football show, and they all have like these different betting companies sponsorships on their jerseys. When you look at the hoardings around the pitch, they're all betting companies as well. Yeah. And it's great to see the GAA taking the lead on this, because, like, I mean, I think gambling issues are very, very serious, and I've noticed that a lot of conversations are based around gambling within GAA now as well. And Oisín McConville has been out speaking about it, and he thinks that GAA players shouldn't be allowed gamble on GAA at all, because you tend to bet heavier on GAA because you think you know more about it. Yeah. And I thought that was a really good point, one I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think just the whole, I suppose, gambling experience has changed so much now with the online betting and all of that. It's a very, very different environment that players are in now, and it's just so easy to do. It's just so easy to click into your phone and lay off bets and things, not necessarily GAA matches, anything. And I think this is a good initiative from the GAA, but to be honest with you, I think they could take, you know, a much more aggressive lead in this. I'm not too sure what you can do statutorily or anything like that, but I think they could, you know, take a much bigger lead on this and just lead the public, I suppose, into, to be honest with you, I'd ban all of this as much as I can. I think I know of some players that it has really eaten into their lives and caused absolute mayhem in their lives and in their family lives and that. And, you know, some of them have gone public on it, and it's very clear, very, very difficult to sort out, and sometimes the bills that's left behind and the pain that's left behind, you know, it's just savage and very, very difficult to sort yourself out of. And, you know, some county boards, you know, I understand, you know, have been good on it in dealing with players and that, but sometimes that's just, you know, providing a crutch to the player. It's not dealing with the cause of the issue as such. So look, it's a welcome initiative, but I'd like them to even, you know, become much more aggressive in just banning this altogether and do whatever they can to just take this out of society.
Betting players, I actually feel, and I said this again on the football show, is sometimes on Thursdays we do little accumulators here, and you wonder whether it's even the right thing to do, or are you glorifying this betting? Are you actually contributing to the issues? And then you wonder, it's not illegal, and if you can't enjoy it, you know, sensibly maybe is the right message to put out there. But then some fellas, if addiction is a disease, and they might do it once and be hooked, and another fella do it 100 times and not be hooked. It's a really sensitive kind of subject that it's hard to know what the right way to deal with it is.
It is, yeah. And I suppose what Oisín said is it's a vital point that people think they know the ins and outs of hurling and football there as well, and it's probably once they think they know that, they'll probably bet heavier on it, because just the situation in one club there a few years ago that we were playing Ballyhale in a league championship match, and 9 times 10 we wouldn't get near Ballyhale at all, but at start of the week we were 8-1, and then there was word going around that TJ was injured, then Henry was starting on the Sunday game, his first game, he was injured, then Colin Finley got injured, And then another one, a couple of county players got injured there as well. And then half the county nearly was backing him again, just from people talking. And, yeah, oh, we'll get on this now because they're 8-1. And but it was kind of backed into 3 or 4-1. But sure, we only barely beat him by a last minute point. And I'd say there was a lot of people sweating on that as well. Like, you know, it's just, it's funny the way things kind of escalate. And you're meeting people, got a couple of lads throughout the county within the couple of weeks after that as well. I said, "Jesus, I had you. Jesus, why'd you only win by a pint?" And I said, "We're not doing this for you to win at." You know what I mean? Where we try to win the game ourselves, you know. Yeah. It's just very funny, people, once they have money on it, to have ownership on as well, and to think that they've got to invite the right to win there as well. But it is very, very local. And you hear, especially club games, not as much as inter-county club games, that this lad's injured, the other lad's injured, I'm going to go heavy on these. Yeah. It's a handy money and all this kind of stuff. But again, it's you never see a poor bookies, like it's you're going to eventually give it back to them anyway, you know, that kind of way. So it's just a tricky situation. But there's no harm to just kind of get rid of it out of GAA and don't associate yourself with something like that as well, because I don't think they're not doing any benefit to it. So why would you associate yourself with that? You know?
I used to be terrified. Well, when I was playing, you get texts off different fellas, "Well, Woolly, are you going to win?" And you'd have to be in the mind space that you think you're going to win.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so I'd always say, "Jeez, I think we have a great, we're going to win." Like, and then you think this lad like loves a bet, and you're after giving this lad this information. And you know, I just stopped replying to these texts because I don't want to be responsible for.
And he'd tell two or three other people, "Oh, I was talking to Woolly there, and they're flying." Inside, you know, not going to affect, you know, it's mad the way people, like, especially tips around Cheltenham as well. Sure, everyone's an expert on it, but and they don't talk about horses from one end of the year to the other, you know. It's tricky. Like.
It absolutely is something I've noticed in the last 4 or 5 years has caught absolute fire. And conversations around teams and friends are revolving around bets, and it was never the case years ago. And like, it's a silent issue that you don't know these people because they're doing it online and they don't look disheveled. And they don't look like they've got a drink problem or a drug problem, and that's why it's so dangerous. So look, this is a positive step, I think, from the GAA, and like Cheddar says, maybe they can go a little step further if possible. Right, we'll be back in a second.
It won't tell you, there's no point in papering over like that. And it is extremely tough, I won't tell you. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else, it's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday, it said 6 years, it's lost to your leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was Tuesday morning, my nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, delighted to say Kerry manager Fintan O'Connor is on the line now. Fintan, you're after informing me before we started the interview you're a fan of the podcast, so I'm going to go very easy on you here today.
Yeah, it's cute now. I listen to every Tuesday and Thursday on my home train, but it's lovely to kill a bit of time on the road.
Yeah, so how much time do you have to kill on the road? Because obviously you're down in Kerry, you're a teacher in Waterford, so what are we talking?
Yeah, about 2 hours, depending on traffic, I suppose. Sometimes it's a little quicker. Around 2 hours, 10 minutes, most nights, you know.
Right, okay, because I was talking to Stephen Wallace last week. He's got a 3-hour commute from Kerry up to Offaly, and he does a lot of ringing around to players and treats his car a little bit like an office.
Yeah, mine's a little bit like that too. And look, I suppose it's nice to get all the work done in the car, and then when you get home, you're home and you're fine. You have the downtime, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, come here, listen, you have a big game against Mead at home at the weekend. You had that slip up against Carlow earlier on. So, like, I mean, if you want to get into the final, get back up into Division 2A, then 1B, then you obviously need to be winning this one.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's a real knockout game, and Mead are really improved, and they turned us over last year in championship very convincingly. So look, we'll be under pressure on Sunday, but things are going okay training wise, and hopefully we can get a result on Sunday.
You beat Cork in the Munster Hurling League, so the year started off so strongly.
Yeah, I suppose, look, in fairness to Cork now, like, it comes with a little asterisk, they are probably had a lot of their main players missing, and so probably their, maybe even their third team, but look, it's still, we've never beaten Cork in any competitive match, so it was a nice one start here, and it gave the lads a little bit of confidence because they've put in a massive shift before Christmas to try and get right, and it's the first time we've had a real good result in that Munster League, which is gives everyone a little bit of confidence, you know?
So how does a result like that get reported in Kerry? Like, I mean, is it a big deal that you beat Cork? We know, like, football is a way of life down in Kerry. What's it like getting a good result in hurling down there?
Oh, well, look, it just, I suppose, it raises the profile, and sometimes that's that part of their job. Like, you want to try and raise the profile of the game, and get any day we get a result, you'd be hoping that another young fella in Kerry would think about playing hurling. And look, there's very proud hurling people in Kerry, and we're well supported, and we'll get a lot of very good support from the county board there. So look, it's nice to get a good result, and a result that's kind of high profile.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, you've the David Clifford's coming onto the scene now, the Gooch is retired, and a lot of the heroes are on the football team getting so far. Like, I mean, it's not even like a county like Leash where both teams would be kind of have equal levels of success. You're kind of swimming against the tide down there an awful lot.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose, in fairness to footballers, they enjoyed an awful lot of success, and even the minors the last 3 or 4 years have been really excellent. So it's a good culture, I suppose, a culture of winning, and if we can try and take a little bit of kind of if we can learn from what they're doing and try and achieve, get half the results that they get, we'd be happy.
You're a funny one, Fintan, because let me get all this straight. You're from Kildare, you live in Tipperary, you teach in Waterford, you manage Kerry, you're an ex-rugby coach, and you never played hurling. Have I got all those things right?
Yeah, all right. I'm hungry. I suppose, in fairness, the hurling really only happened when I went teaching in Lismore in sector school, and I suppose I was lucky that I had so many young fellows there that are very good hurlers, like Star Fives and Mark and Jamie Barron and the Bennetts and all those fellows, and they were mad about their hurling, and they just want someone to bring them to active, and that's really all I was doing, kind of really bringing them and letting them out to play. And look, their enthusiasm was kind of infectious, and their love for it was infectious. And I suppose I was coming from kind of a semi-professional rugby background and dealing with players that were getting paid, and they were just, look, it wasn't that I was proud off with the rugby, but just there was such a freshness. And look, young fellas will rub off on you. They just had such a love for it. I suppose it rubbed off on me, and I just kind of fell into it, and I've been at it ever since, and I fell in love with it, you know.
That's an interesting one, because I suppose at that young level, it's not tactical, so the speeches you'd be making in the rugby could transfer directly across, you know, their general team kind of motivational speeches at that age, maybe, rather than having to technically know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And look, like young fellas don't really care once you bring them on a bus, and I suppose they're getting out of school. They're nearly happy with anyone bringing them. And I suppose that was very much the way it started for me. And look, we had some good results in the school, and when we got to Hearty Cup semi final, which is kind of the highlight of. I remember that as a school, we won all the C and B divisions and got up to Hearty and competed fairly well with the likes of Darragh Fives, and those kind of backbone of the team. And then they kind of got into club coaching, and then Derek asked me to get involved with Waterford, so it kind of went from there. So look, I love doing it, and it's really enjoyable, but I'm learning kind of on the job.
Yeah, exactly. And have you had to fight against this hurling snobbery? Because I have to admit, I fight against it here, being a football man trying to talk about hurling. Not that I pretend I know anything I'm talking about, but there is that kind of culture of the hurling people, for example, and if you're on the outside of that, you're not a hurling person. So have you had to fight against that, or any experience with that?
Not really. Now, I suppose if you admit it, and you've kind of, I often listen to you on the show there, and you're always saying you're not a hurling person. And so sometimes when you say it out loud, or I never tell anyone that I played, or I wouldn't be trying to cover up the fact that I didn't play. And I just think if you have the right people around you, and you can organise it well, and you can kind of, the players are willing to listen to you, and you're not trying to say come off as something that you're not, they'll believe in what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, they'll trust you. So, like, I mean, you had a lot of success, like you were saying, with the schools, and you had club success as well, and then you got the phone call from Derek. So was that, like, were you thinking you were getting towards that level of being involved with Intercounty, or did that come as a surprise to you?
Not really, no. It would have come as a bit of a surprise to me, especially when me and Derek would have killed each other for years on the sideline between Dennis and Scuba and the club teams. I was with, he was kind of against me on the sideline, and I suppose the two of us would have been fairly similar on the line. It would have been fiery enough, so it was a bit of a surprise to me, but it was a real honour to go in and again get the chance to work with some of the lads I would have had in school, and some of the lads that I would have known from WIT, which is Gibbon, the likes of Paddy Manny and Jake and all. So look, I was delighted to get into Waterford, and it was a real pleasure and a real place to learn, and Derek and Dan and all the lads in Waterford were very good to me, you know.
Yeah, so like, I mean, Derek would be, his big strength, I suppose, is that he's a real player's man. His attention to detail, he'd be on the very top level of management. So, you know, would it have opened your eyes to that level of coaching?
Yeah, look, I think in fairness to Derek, he's a real passionate Waterford hurling person, and he's trying to get the absolute best out of the team, and he's trying to do it for the right reasons. And as you said, he's a real player's person, but he's an excellent coach, and he ticked all the boxes, and it was great to kind of work with him and see what he was doing. And I'd be trying to carry a lot of what he was doing into what I'm trying to do, and not saying that I'd be doing it half as good, but look, it's nice to work with someone like that. I suppose I'm lucky the principal of school is involved very heavily in GAA as well. Dennis Ring, he would have been involved with Cork Minors over the years, and was brought to the All-Ireland final last year. He's with the under-21s this year, so I'd have a little bit of help there as well. And look, there's loads. I suppose I'm lucky the school I'm in, everyone's heading into GAA, so we sit around the table at break time and we're discussing different teams and tactics and what they're doing. And look, I'm always thinking about it or talking about it, you know. Lads are probably sick of me at the table talking about GAA.
So come here, obviously you learned from Derek McGrath then, and he'd had a big influence on you. So do Kerry play a similar style? Have to admit, you wouldn't see Kerry on the television too often to know what style of play you play. So is it like Waterford, or what way do you work?
Yeah, look, we play to our strengths, and maybe the Kerry strengths aren't like, maybe wouldn't have it natural. The way Waterford play suits our players, and the makeup of their players and the makeup of the team, and I think that's the trick. Sometimes people are critical of the way they line up, but they line up to suit themselves, and I think they probably shouldn't apologise for that. And maybe we don't, I don't think it suits our players to play the exact same way, but we would at times play out a seventh defender or play out an extra midfielder, or just depends on the opposition and what kind of team we have out in the day. But yeah, sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. It just depends what we have available to us.
Yeah, I suppose being flexible in it. So, like, I mean, Division 2A, would you see a lot of teams in 2A playing with sweepers and having to deal with that kind of thing? Like, I suppose not only two of the top teams, Wexford and Waterford, regularly play with them.
Yeah, I think, look, I don't know. I think Davy and Derek play with a sweeper, and it might be more apparent, but the way Kilkenny play, I think if you watch Kilkenny Waterford last week, he's running with 100 yards for the goal for a lot of the game, and he picked up. I know when Owen Murphy made a save, it came out, and I think TJ Reid was on the 45. And like, Kilkenny have been doing it for years, playing a real deep wing forward, maybe not an out sweeper, but definitely a half forward line helping their half back there. I think a lot of the teams across all the divisions are nearly doing the same now. Most days we go out, you wouldn't, the days of playing 15 on 15 and everyone standing winning their own ball are nearly gone, to be honest with you, no matter what anyone says. Even Cork last year, people were raving about how traditional and how good they were, and they were, but they were still had Shane Kingston and them miles from goal playing as deep line wing forwards helping out their half back line. And I think that every team is nearly doing something like that now, you know.
Yeah, they're all, listen, there's a lot of nuance to what kind of is going on tactically, even though when you listen to a lot of people you just think hear sweeper and you hear absolutely nothing else outside of it.
Yeah, and I think in fairness, I actually think the job that the lads have done in Waterford, the way that the level of consistency they've got, and I think they're getting the best out of the team that they have available to them, and I think they should be given credit for it. And I sometimes feel sorry for the narrative of the sweeper. I just think it's kind of nearly lazy at times to say, oh, they're setting up with a sweeper, but there's a lot of time to play and they've no sweeper, or they're not doing exactly what it says on the tin, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. And would you talk to Derek much now? Like, I mean, would you be able to ring him up and pick his brain ahead of a game or after a game or stuff like that?
I would, and he's still very supportive, and he's still trying to help me out as best he can. And look, it's always to be able to ring someone that's operating at that level and get a few ideas off. But even simple things like the way they're preparing or what they're doing coming up to games and that. And he's very generous with his time, and he's generous enough that he's not run like he's honest, and he tell you exactly what they're doing. He's not trying to hide it from me anyway. So yeah, I would like try to be in touch with him every now and again, you know.
Yeah, would you ring anybody else as a matter of interest when you get into management on your own? Like, I mean, because you were under Derek for so long, would you ever pick up the phone and just ask advice from another manager? I'm just wondering, does that go on between managers?
Yeah, look, I suppose. When I myself, Derek actually would have met Tony Buckley there, who coached Mayo footballers a few times, and he was very, very helpful. And I suppose I meet him, and it's obviously in Kerry, the same training area or the same dressing room if we're training in the same place or whatever. And I kind of talk to him, and we have a kind of overlap of staff a little bit. Their physio helps our physio a bit. So, yeah, there'd definitely be a flow of information that way. And I suppose you'd be ringing for challenge matches and you'd be talking to different managers. I'd always talk to Ken Martin there and Offaly, and look, I suppose you talk to whoever. I love talking to you, so I talk to anyone and try and get any idea to kind of help us or get us an extra percent or two. I would definitely call him Bonner as well, even though we're in kind of direct opposition this year. I would have spoken to him a good bit last year and kind of bounce ideas off him, and he would have been helpful too. So anyone that'll help me, I definitely take the help. I'm not a proud fella.
I hope you didn't tell Bonner too much last year after the result this year. Come here, talk to us about the championship here now, because you're in this is a real weird one, isn't it, for yourselves? Because obviously, the winner of the Leinster, the Leinster B Championship you're in with the likes of...
Yeah, Joe McDonagh, yeah, the winner goes...
Joe McDonagh, that's it, yeah. Yeah, I should
have... The going to the Leinster Championship proper, and I suppose Kerry don't. Kerry have to play the last place team in the Munster Championship, which is, I suppose, with no disrespect to anyone in Kerry, it'll be a very hard match no matter how well we are going and playing any of the top five teams in Munster. Will be a massive test for us, whereas I suppose if Leash or Antrim or anyone win to Joe McDonagh, apart from us, they go straight into Leinster, which is tough for our lads to take at times. But look, we just have to get on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sorry, it is obviously the Joe McDonagh. I actually mentioned that last Monday and I couldn't remember it today. But that's the thing. So that just seems grossly unfair. But, like, I mean, what's the solution maybe then, Fintan? Because, like, you couldn't really... This Munster Championship is this mystical, mythical kind of championship.
Yeah,
you couldn't have one drop out of that, really. But, like, I mean, is there a solution? It doesn't seem fair on Kerry either.
No, well, I think we were operating in the Leinster Championship the last number of years, and if we were coming out of the round robin, we were going into the Leinster Championship, and I don't see why that should have changed.
I think
if we had a talk to Joe McDonagh, maybe we should have been given the chance to go into Leinster, like Leash and Antrim and all the rest of it. But look, as I said to you, it's not, we won't get anywhere by crying over it. We just have to get on with it and try our best and look, see how we get on it. There's no guarantee. Joe McDonagh Cup, Antrim, Leash, Westmeath, everyone will be trying to win it. So look, it might be a problem that arises for us this year, but look, we'll be trying our best to get that match against the bottom team in Munster. I'm not saying we'll win it, but we'll try our best to get there anyway, you know.
Yeah, but it's definitely a strange one. There's no doubt about that the winner of the Joe McDonagh gets into Leinster, unless it's ye, and then ye have to play off. Ye don't get in there. Did you voice your concerns about this to anyone in the GAA or anything when this was decided?
Well, we didn't really get an opportunity to honestly voice our concerns. That's the stipulation of it. We didn't know about it until it was nearly published. There wasn't really any consultation other than there was going to be the Joe McDonagh Cup and there was going to be five or six teams competing in it, and there wasn't really a mention that Kerry were going to be treated differently until it was published, and I suppose then it was too late maybe to change it or whatever, but there wasn't really that much consultation with us up to that point, you know.
Yeah, geez, that's kind of disappointing, really, you know what I mean, just to shunt you back to Munster with a playoff and not let you back into a championship. Some GAA kind of decisions and rules would just baffle me here on this show, there's no doubt. You've left, so I suppose going back to the league here before we finish up, Fintan, you have got Meath next and then you have Westmeath, so you've two of the more difficult games left till the end. And is getting back up really important to Kerry, or is kind of the focus now that you're in that Joe McDonagh and you have another kind of league championship, is the focus trying to get, you know, out of that, or, you know, win that, for example?
Yeah, I'd say, look, if you're to prioritise, you probably prioritise championship like every team, but we would have definitely sat down at the start of the year and said, look, we want to
try and do as best as we can in the league. We've been in 1B the last couple of years, and it's hard at times to know is it the right place to be for Kerry, and maybe, like, I don't know. We are playing, like, last year we played Galway, Wexford, Limerick, and it was, you're kind of going out with damage limitation in mind a lot of the time within reason. You're not, like, obviously saying to players, look, you're not, this is a nightmare, you're not going to win the match. But the lads know themselves as well that they'd have to play really well, and Limerick or Galway or Wexford will have to play really badly to be competitive even. And that's sometimes hard to get yourself organised in, because it's hard to have momentum if you're getting beaten by 10 or 12 points. But look, I suppose them games are the games you need to bring on and try and get to the next level. So we'd love to go back up to 1B. But this league that we're in at the moment is a really competitive league. We played London, Carlow, we played Kildare the weekend. I know Westmeath and Meath are very good sides, so we've really good competitive games every week, and there's no guarantee we're going to win any game, and there's no guarantee we're going to lose any game. So it's a nice league to be in. It's definitely given us very competitive games, and I think it's preparing us nearly better for the championship this year than maybe last year, because last year we would have felt that some of the games we were going out in and maybe setting up in a way that was to stop scores rather than to play ourselves, you know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Definitely it's better preparation for the Joe McDonagh, which is of teams of similar levels playing each other as well. But listen, Fintan, we've gone over time here. This hurling show is going to be absolute monster here today. Thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck at the weekend.
Nice one. Thanks for being a bully friend.
Great stuff from Fintan there. Up next, we'll take a look ahead to the weekend's hurling.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yes to the Marty squad. Says yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad jokes on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here.
It's gas. We talked about Dublin here and how the narrative can change, and Kilkenny were in crisis, and I was saying this trying to get more information out of lads here on the show a couple of weeks ago. They're never in crisis, but they definitely looked in a position where they had maybe lost their invincibility, and they weren't in the place that are accustomed to seeing Kilkenny. So whether it was a crisis down there, JJ, or not, I don't know. What was the talk in the pubs?
It was just a lot of people now were doing the same. We need to give this team a lot of time, and we need to support this team as much as possible as well, because again, if you look at the team the first couple of days now, they didn't have Richie Hogan, TJ Reid, Colin Fenley, Paul Murphy, all these guys and Conor Fogarty as well was missing for a couple of games. But then you see the big huge difference that TJ made there last Sunday as well, and he scored a lot now as well, but
he
takes watching as well. Like, there's two or three players watching TJ anytime he goes for the ball, and that actually gave a lot of space to Mossy Keown and these guys to go out and actually express themselves in hurling as well, because you have to think about it. This is their first year in intercounty hurling as well. You're doing well to break even. You can't expect 19, 20 year olds, 21 year olds to go out there and dominate games. You're not going to do that. And Mossy Keown had a brilliant game there the other day, but I was actually very impressed with him against Cork as well, because he just puts his head down and works. But he got the scores against Waterford, and he got the plaudits against Waterford as well.
Was he well known in Kilkenny that this lad's on the way up, like a young Tommy Walsh, maybe not to the level of that, but like, are you waiting for Keown to come on the scene? Or is this a surprise?
No, it's kind of, look, again, as Damien Hayes would love to say, he's good breeding in him. His father's Liam Keown there. He was hurled for Kilkenny there for years wing back, and he won All Ireland with Kilkenny in the early 90s as well. Brilliant hurler as well. Like, so we've heard of Liam's couple of sons coming through right now. We played him in a club game there last year. We're very, very impressed with him. He's very quick and direct and strong for his age. Very, very strong for his
Hardy
age.
Hardy looking, yeah.
Yeah. And he just kind of seems he's built for it, all right, you know. But again, no, he wouldn't be. He was on the under-21 panel last year. didn't make the team, but this year, like, he just made the step up and he's putting his hand up in the air. And again, when the likes of TJ and Richie Hogan, these guys come back on board, and Colin Fenley come back on board, it'll free up a lot of space for him. And if he tips away with 3 or 4 points a game, geez, we'd be delighted with him.
Yeah, there was an interesting thing, that's what I was talking to Tony Brown. He's writing in the Examiner now, and he was saying he was at the game and he actually had to go back and re-watch the game to prove to himself that he wasn't seeing things. And this was what he was saying, is Kilkenny going with short puckouts, 20 yard passes, and it was a Kilkenny team that we're not used to, that have realised that going against the sweeper with this long game is not working, and this is a different Kilkenny altogether, Cheddar.
Yeah, I think there's two things. I think the first thing in the matches that Kilkenny were beaten in, they had high scores and all of them, they were only beaten by a couple of points, so it wasn't that there was a bad performance, and I think that's what you're always looking at. You're looking at this time of the year, the performance maybe a little bit above the result. And I think that point is really, really important. I don't know whether JJ agrees with it, but certainly Kilkenny are gone much more tactical now, and their use of defensive wing forwards and working back the field and creating space up the field is probably a good little bit more now than what they've done a number of years ago. Having said that, I remember being at the Saturday night's game in Thurles last year against Waterford, and certainly, you know, they were certainly working back the field and staying back the field a lot in that game. And you know, there's obviously two aspects to that. You're much tighter defensively, you have much more numbers around the ball, but you're also creating more space up front for quality hurlers and quality forwards and that. And I think probably, I don't know whether Brian Cody would like to admit it or not, but I think the year that Tipperary beat him in the All-Ireland, I think probably learned a lot about leaving that type of space on the outside of quality forwards like Seamus Callan, you know, would have been suicidal. And, you know, JJ would know from a defensive point here that the quality ball to space on the outside of the forward in front of you is very difficult to mark. And, you know, do you attack the ball and risk, you know, letting him inside you, or do you let him get the ball? And, you know, letting some of these bubbles and some of these players with the ball in their hand is equally very, very risky. So what do you do? I think, you know, I think Kilkenny's so far anyway look to, you know, have just employed much more tactical plays in the way they actually play, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that develops for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I just put this to you actually, Cheddar, because when you were with Leash, you played a sweeper and you played that kind of the defensive modern kind of style as well, and that whole style is based around the traditional hurling kind of style of a team clearing the ball down the field. You know what I mean? You know that traditional style that the Ken McGraths, the Tommy Walshes, and Tommy Walsh even referenced this on Air Sport recently. They said my game wouldn't be any good in this day and age because I'd be clearing it down to the sweeper. But that's what the sweepers are doing, and Kilkenny maybe were falling into this trap, and maybe they needed to change that.
I think. Look, I'd never call the sweeper system a defensive system, to be honest with you. To me, it's an offensive system. It's how you use the ball and what you're doing using the ball. And, you know, some teams manage really, really well against it. I think Tipperary manage it well now. And I remember actually Tipperary played us in the challenge game in Thurles prior to one of their championship games, just simply to practice playing against that. And, you know, how you use the ball, the diagonal ball, the use of ball to space, the runs of your forwards and that to create that space, and the understanding between all of the players. You need to have a very, very high level of understanding players to make that work. And to make that work offensively, it's not an out-and-out defensive system, although having a player back there, of course, is a help to you. And most of the time, it's the type of player that you play there. You know, is the player a good distributor of the ball? Is he a good reader of where to come off the shoulder, take the ball and actually distribute the ball to the right places? And does your forward line know what he's actually going to do with it? So I don't see Kilkenny going sweeper, to be honest with you, but they will be, I think, much more aware of the defensive responsibilities, particularly of wing forwards. And I think what JJ is explaining earlier on in terms of that work rate, that's actually what we're seeing. It's players coming back to field, more men around the ball to win primary possession, and then what you're actually doing with the ball at that stage.
What do you think, JJ? Did you see a new Kilkenny, or is that the talk? Or
I'd like to see him developing their game as well, because again, it is a system that Kilkenny have come up against over the last while, and probably struggle a small bit with him, like the likes of Wexford. They will be playing it against Wexford this year as well. Like, so why not try out these things now in the league and show the players, show themselves, prove to themselves that they can actually play this game. Like, they're all fabulous stick hurlers as well, and if they can do that short passing game within that Walsh Park, Stirling is there as well. A heavy field, a wet day. Like, comes the summer, then they should be actually bouncing off the ground, and all them passes will be sticking a lot more as well. So the more the weather gets better, it's easier that the game is going to play as well. But it's huge that Cheddar's had to make, and obviously a brilliant point that when you're playing short ball, it's only as good as where the forwards are running into. Forwards will have to run into space as much as possible as well, like, you know, because again, you can clear the ball and your team knows where it's going, but if your forward doesn't make into it, run into that space where the ball was going, then the whole crowd's getting on your back. You always have to puck it away. But he didn't, he actually kept it to the system, but they weren't kind of tuned in. But again, that's going to be down to fitness, mentality, and just kind of dogging it out that they will actually kind of get back the sweeper. One team that are actually brilliant at it is Tipperary. They never seem to be actually upset by it, because they're going down the sides, and they have Noel McGrath kind of going into midfield, and he'd puck the ball into your pocket, you know what I mean, no matter where you go. So that's one way around it as well. It's just interesting to see, because the likes of when you take the sweeper system, you think of Waterford and Wexford and how they play it, and it's actually funny enough they play it two different ways, you know, because Tadhg de Burke would distribute a lot of ball and clear a lot of ball, but probably your man Murphy there from Wexford was on an equal amount of ball as Tadhg de Burke, but he runs with it, and then they have runners off that as well. So same concept, but played two completely different ways. So again, it's not one trick kind of solves the whole thing problem as well. Like, it's just to get on the ball and kind of express yourself as much as possible too.
Yeah, so I suppose the sweeper obviously has two jobs, Cheddar. Like, I mean, he has to be there for breaking ball, and he has to be there to try and cut out ball to the full forward line. That's his defensive job. Then obviously when he gets the ball, he has a whole other job. And like, I mean, that's a really important part to coach him. Like JJ said, Wexford's sweeper is coached to do one thing, Tadhg de Burke is coached to do another. And like, I mean, I think often that analysis is left out of maybe the whole kind of coverage.
I agree with that. I think that surprises me at times that you know, some of the top analysts in the game don't really talk through the details of that. And you know, the sweeper would also be there as a second tackler on dangerous players and that.
So yeah, doubling up. Yeah,
you double up, and always understand where his position is on the field. But look, I think hurling, you know, some of the traditional people, you know, mightn't thank me for saying this, but I think hurling will be much more fluid game into the future. I think what Derek McGrath has brought into it, and obviously what Davies brought into it for the last couple of years, I think, you know, you won't see positions, with the exception maybe of the full back line, I just don't think you'll see players playing positions as tight as we've known in the past. And I think you'll be looking at different types of players, and this is what always surprised me about Kilkenny, because of their huge skill level, that their mobility around the field and their changing of positions and that mightn't have been a little bit more, because I just thought they had a higher skill level than an awful lot of other players and really had the skill sets to play that type of game. But I think into the future, if somebody needs to get an edge on another team, you're always looking to get your team with an edge that they're not able to cope with and that they haven't rehearsed before. And I think, you know, mobility around the field, whether it's a corner forward, he probably won't be playing corner forward, he may very well be picking up ball wing back, but he's equally a corner forward who can score. And I think he'll be looking at much more flexible players outside of the full back line, which you always need to guard, obviously, not laying silly goals. I think from there up, you'll be looking for much more flexibility from your players. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, the next number of years that you know, methods of play and tactical play will develop and change a lot. And look, it mightn't please the traditionalist, but they probably said the same about Gaelic football 7 or 8 years ago. There was an awful lot of people jumping up and down about it. You know, you can go now and see some fantastic Gaelic football matches with some very, very intelligent play going on, or at least that's what I see anyway.
Yeah, and it's moving back a little bit away from, you won't win anything being ultra defensive. You have to leave a certain amount of forwards up there. Here's an interesting one for Kilkenny, and I agree with Cheddar, you'll never see Kilkenny use the sweeper themselves, but when they play a team that plays the sweeper, they're obviously going to be left with an extra back. So who's the best extra defender that Kilkenny should be using, JJ?
We've seen Killian Buckley had a brilliant game against Waterford last year in the championship, and he hurled a mountain of the ball. He was the spare man because he's athletic, he's well used to distributing the ball as well. Because
see, here's the thing, was that just happened by chance, or because like when they played Wexford up in what's the Wexford home ground?
Innovate Park, Wexford Park.
Jesus, it was the easiest one ever that I couldn't remember. But he manned Mark Lee Chin that night. So it's not like there's a consistent sweeper with Kilkenny, as in, like, they'll say, right, if we're playing a team with a sweeper, you're our man. Kilkenny seem to have somebody different every day, and maybe that's not the kind of consistency that the team needs.
Conor Fordy was the spare man that night, and I'd say they had Killian Buckley earmarked to go toe-to-toe with Lee Chin. He was centre-forward and Killian was centre-back, and he hurled him well until Lee Chin went out midfield. midfield, and he started doing a lot of damage there as well. Like, so
yeah, but should they have the same lad all the time? Just
I think they should. Probably from now on, you probably see they will actually have the same man all the time, because he's the right man forward. He kind of hits a lot of crossfield ball there.
Ooh,
as
Killian.
Well. Killian, yeah, right. Yeah, because your centre back for his club, Dixburn, he was brilliant in county final as well. Even when he was marking his man, he still was bursting out, and he's very athletic and good off the right or left. But he knows, he was a forward himself when he started off, so he knows what playing a ball that the forwards want there as well. So crossfield ball is always the most dangerous ball for full back line to deal with anyway. So he'll know, and he has the legs to get up and down the field, and he has the kind of intelligence to actually work that, and the confidence really more than anything, because any young guy coming on the inter-county team, they'll probably get the ball and try and get rid of it straight away. But well, Killian has that experience under his belt that he can actually go try and ship a tackle now and break the tackle and move forward as well, because he's very, very athletic as well.
Yeah, so maybe that's the answer, Killian Buckley. That's your job in this game, you know, because I think we all know it's Waterford and Wexford pretty much, and maybe some one or two others, you know, on occasion. But like, I mean, you should know going in, for players in their own heads, Cheddar, that this is what we're going to do if this happens.
I agree with that in principle, but you'd be taking a game by game. You know, Killian may very well be the best man marker for the best player in Wexford, the best forward in Wexford, the best forward in Waterford. So look, you'd probably forsake him as the sweeper and doing that. But look, there's a couple of principles about a sweeper. Like, they need to be very, very skillful, very striker, very good striker, very good vision. They also need to be very quick to go front foot. And, you know, JJ's explaining Killian there. You need to make ground quickly with the ball in the hand to get yourself into a scoring area. But the real trick of the whole thing, I think, is that do the forwards understand what you're going to do with the ball, and have you rehearsed that? And I think that goes back to the point then that you're making, Willie, that if it's the same person the whole time, obviously there's a better, much better understanding build up of where you're going to deliver the ball, and you know where the forward's going to make a run, and he knows where you're going to put the ball. And look, that level of understanding in the team is just gold dust.
Yeah, no, I agree. Listen, Kilkenny actually are unbelievably interesting this year, aren't they? Like, I mean, with some of the new faces now, they won't all make it, but like, I mean, you know, Keown, Ling, Donnelly, Lahey, who's so like exciting, and he looks like a real player. He is one fella that might be earmarked, as in he was the big name coming up. But like, I mean, these lads could all play a part.
It's very good. Every Friday night now, you'd be just mad to hear what the team is going to be. You know what I mean? Whereas there for a good few years, you could predict the team by one or two players, but now you're kind of looking forward to see what team is going to go out.
You're back to the real world now, JJ. That's the thing. You're trying to look to the future, like all of us, just maybe to come here. I want to mention Galway lads before we go on, because one thing that jumps out at me about Galway, there's no talk about them. Nobody's talking about Galway, and they're all Ireland champions. And I remember this time last year, wasn't a Tipper going to be the new Kilkenny? They're going to be the new dominating force. There's a new kids on the block. They were blowing teams away playing great hurling. But Galway, whether it's through accident or design, I don't know. We know Micheál Donoghue, who's a very smart man, but they're just completely flying below the radar in Division 1B, and they're getting themselves prepared. They're getting some hurling into them without any talk, without any national spotlight on them.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I suppose you could put that down that they haven't been on the television really, you know, the kind of live games that everyone sits down and kind of you can analyse.
Yeah, but they haven't been playing well.
They haven't been playing well, but they're still winning games, and I think they're in a good situation now coming in the weekend there as well. Look, you'd be expecting them to go in and go back up there again, but they're in a position that they can try a few players as well, and the big guns haven't been back yet or anything like that. And again, they've been affected by Fitzgibbon hurling there as well, so they have actually tried a few different players as well. Ideal situation for Micheál Donoghue, because coming into Leinster League then they'll be fine for places back in again, hungry again, whenever this league is finished.
Yeah, that's it. It's hard to know, and like, I mean, when Tipperary won the All-Ireland last year, Cheddar, it was like, geez, how is anyone going to fit into this team? And then when they lost against Cork, you could find a whole load of places lads are going to fit in. But I'm looking at this Galway team that won the All-Ireland, and like, you're going to have to be a fairly exceptional young fella to be coming up to break into that team. That's just so strong. Oh, look, there might be one place in the forwards that might be up for grabs, you know what I mean, but the rest of them seem set in stone. But we know All-Ireland champions nearly have to freshen it up a little bit to keep that hunger there.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things about Galway. They have been sluggish in the first couple of matches, and I saw them against Leash, and I just thought they were sluggish that night. And you know, even their scoring against Antrim would sort of suggest the same. But you know, obviously Michael has taken a decision to rest a little bit over the winter. Bear in mind, this Galway team are on the go at a high level for a number of years. They're a very, very, very experienced team. This is not a team that has just come up overnight like Clare a number of years ago and won an All-Ireland. Very young team. This is an experienced team. So I think they have the ability, and there's no no better man than the man beside me here to be able to explain this. To have the ability to be able to cycle slow and then, you know, put down the boot when they want to. Difficult thing to do and a risky thing to do, I think. But I think, you know, Michael is a very astute manager. He will have thought this out, and he will have looked at, you know, experiences in the past with other teams and that, and he would have figured out that, look, I need to give these players time to recharge the batteries, but I am confident that they have the hunger and the ambition in them to go again next year, and that they will be able to ramp up this when they want to. So it's probable that, and again, you know, you hate commenting on something when you don't know what's going inside the camp, because you're just speculating, really. But it's probably...
See, that's you moving from manager to pundit, to see, Cheddar. I'm very comfortable speculating.
No problem with it.
It's probable that they, maybe took it easy before Christmas and are training really, really hard. So they're putting in the real hard yards now, and you're not seeing the freshness in the legs and the flow in the team and that. And Michael's taken a chance that will come in time for the championship. But you also have to consider that, you know, the championship is going to be very, very different this year. And I think he's done no different than what Derek McGrath has done in terms of trying to find a couple of new players, maybe start a little bit later and aim to peak at the right time. But you need to peak for a little bit longer now in the championship. I mean, there was a time when JJ here needed to peak for two matches in a year and win in All Ireland. but it's not going to be like, it's not going to be as easy as that, and definitely not for the likes of Waterford and maybe for Galway. You're going to have to get up for, you know, four or five matches now to win in All Ireland. So I'd say some managers are looking at that and they're trying to figure out a way around that. They definitely need to develop the strength and panel of their panel, because you know, a number of injuries to key players, particularly maybe teams outside of the top three counties, a number of injuries to key players in the panel would probably sink you for the year. But there is a risk to losing a number of matches at the start of the year. Galway happened, but if we were to look at Waterford or maybe look at Dublin, they've lost a number of matches, and sometimes that can suck confidence and suck self-belief out of the team. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. You've found a couple of players and you're probably a stronger panel for the year, but, you know, hell, the confidence is after dribbling out of the team, and it's a very, very risky thing to try and manage.
You're always the worst one to ask about this, JJ, even though you've won so many All-Irelands, because he just came back the next year like machines. You were programmed differently, that, like, you'd come back and you'd match a Tipperary and you'd match them for intensity, and this is the first game back or second game back in the league, and you're like, Jesus, they're back again. And I know you did only have to peak, Cheddar's right, like, I mean, Leinster used to walk it, but like, that didn't mean that, it didn't look like you were planning to peak at all during the league, because you were flat out during it.
Yeah, well, look, we went to probably kind of down the market for the summer there as well, like, you're playing these guys in the league, and why give them a kind of psychological boost over you after beating All Ireland champions? Then the next time you meet them is going to be in the championship as well. So you're kind of saying, right, if we can kind of keep these down as much as we can and stay winning, and then once you keep the other team down, that means you're winning as well. So your mentality is getting stronger and stronger as you go, and you don't accept getting bet as well. And that's a big thing for a team going forward. You see it with the Dublin footballers as well, they just don't accept getting bet at the moment. They're just expect to win every game. And look, it's not by fluke that they do win every game, because they actually go out and commit to it, and they actually go and put their money where their mouth is as well. Like, you know, so yeah, it is interesting. But on the point of Galway there this year as well, as what happened to Tipperary last year. When you're training after coming back from winning Ireland, you think, yeah, I'm going to do the same again as last year. I'm going to train away as hard as I can and no problem. You think you're doing that until you get better. At the end of the year then, if you get better, trying to regain a championship, and you're kind of saying, right, if I look back at my own year now, I could have done this better, I could have done it better.
Yeah.
And you don't know until you get better. You see, you could think there'd be some years that we came back, we probably thought we were actually going better than the year previously. We won the year previously, but then we got better the year after, because it's just very, very hard to put the nail in the head at that particular point. But when you review the season then after, then you're kind of saying, yeah, I didn't do that gym session, or I didn't do that hurling as well, and I could have tried a bit harder for that particular training, you know, and you're a bit kind of more critical on ourselves that way, you know what I mean? So that's a kind of a trap door that Galway could possibly fall into, and that Tipperary definitely did fall into last year, you know.
Until they're beaten, it's an aghast of psychology in the GAA, in that a point win and you're okay, a point loss and there'd be four or five changes to the team. So like, I mean, and Mikko used to be unreal, like one of the best managers, the best manager ever in the history. He had a mantra, he never changed a winning team. So you could play shite when the team won, you're grand. Like, I mean, but that was the traditional way, like you don't kind of mess with something that's working. Whereas, like, I mean, doesn't seem logical to me at all. Like, a 1 point win or a 1 point loss, that's only a 2 point swing. One means wholesale changes, the other means everything's wrong. rosy in the garden. It's like that's just the way a lot of minds are programmed, Cheddar.
Yeah, well, I say a number of years ago they didn't have the level of analysis that they have now. I mean, the level of analysis that you go into individual players and team players now is just phenomenal. So you may not have been able to point out to a player that, and you may not have known, having seen the match, that he didn't exactly play the way that you thought he did. So I think the level of analysis now changes a lot of that. And look, there could be some other reasons as well. You may very well be trying to, you know, boost a player by actually keeping him on the field because you know what he can deliver in that.
Yeah.
But I think I think. You know, you're always looking at seeking out how can I improve this individual player, and as such, how can I improve my team? And sometimes you've got to make those changes when you're winning. And I think that's, you know, it's difficult to do. You know, it's difficult to change a winning team. And suddenly, I think if you do change and you go out and you're beaten the next day, then you have an awful lot of people on your back.
Then
you're
under real pressure.
Yeah.
Right, come here, lads. Quickly now, we'll run through each of the six games in the top two divisions. And Kilkenny, Tipperary. Obviously, this is such a big game. It doesn't feel like it's as big because Tipper and experiment. Both teams are in experimentation mode. So who do you fancy here, lads?
Again, I'm not going to go against me own. I think now Tipperary coming to Nolan Park as well is going to be huge, and the lads, especially after winning after last weekend, now they'll either mark this now to kind of lay down a marker again. They got another 2 points on the board. If they do, it'll take a lot of pressure off now as well. So I'm expecting a big performance out of Kilkenny now on Sunday.
Kilkenny win for JJ Cheddar. Who do you fancy?
It's difficult to call this, I suppose. Look, it's going to be impacted majorly by the Fitzgibbon Cup, and you know what players will play or what players won't play. I think Kilkenny, you know, they had good scores in the first two games, and they beat Waterford the last day. But I think, you know, everybody would accept Waterford a little bit off the pace, so it's difficult to really gauge, you know, where their performance is at the minute. I just think Tipperary have a more settled look about them, a little bit more experience on the field. But it's difficult to call this because you're not too sure what team is going, because of the Fitzgibbon, you're not too sure what team is going to line out. I mean, if you were to take Jason Ford off of Tipperary last Sunday, considering what he scored, it might have been a different game. Wexford would probably have won the game, and you know, you'd have a completely different view on this. Look, I'll just go with Tip. I think they have a little bit more experience, and there will be an edge to this game. There always is.
Yeah, there always is. Davy's taken on his old Clare lads to throw a bit of extra spice onto this one. Wexford home to Clare, who are flying it. That's in Wexford Park. Jeez, I had it written in front of me the whole time. Wexford. Who are we taking here, JJ?
I think Wexford's going to win this game. It's just the way they're going at the moment, they're targeting the leader as well. I know they're disappointed in.
So are Clare, you know. Clare targeting.
But I just think that in Wexford Park, I think there's a huge crowd there again on Sunday, great supporters. But I just think the way they're hurling out at the moment, and have their full team available at the moment as well. So I think, though, that Wexford will get over the line out to benefit on Sunday.
Okay, we'll give you Cork versus Waterford then, Cheddar.
I think just on a comment on the game before that, it's going to be a really, really interesting game. I think Clare are setting themselves up a little bit different than previous years. They're definitely looking at strength up the middle. Clearly McNerney at 3 and 6, even though they do interchange. John Conlon seems to be back on low. I wasn't at the game, and you really need to be at the game to see the positions that they play, but he seems to be going in centre forward, and Duggan full forward's a big player.
Duggan comes in and out then as well, out for puck outs.
He does, and promised a lot a number of years ago. I remember he played against us in Ennis a couple of years ago, wing forward, and he dominated a lot that day, and you know, it's time from now, I suppose, to deliver that. But if they're going to play against a sweeper, how are they going to set up? Now obviously Clare have plenty of experience in practice matches of how to play with and against sweeper. So look, it'll be tactically, I think it'll be a very, very interesting game. I think Clare are going back though also to a style of, you know, running the ball, attacking it with pace, and to have the type of players to play that. And again, I'm going back to what I said about the previous game, Fitzgibbon. If there's a number of players missing here, you know, it could just throw you enough that you lose a game here. So I do agree with JJ. I think Wexford will just have the edge in Wexford Park.
It's just on that, because I was asking, we focus a lot on Clare on Monday, and it's a new style, and they have the option of going long now an awful lot more. And I was saying to asking Brendan how frustrating it was to be a wing back, because you know when you're under pressure and you're like, Jesus, I just want to launch this. And he was like, when we won the All-Ireland 2013, you'd be surprised, we played loads of long ball. He said it was only in the next few years we started moving away from that completely. And it's almost like I remember back now to even that Cork final, there was plenty of long ball in that. It's just the last couple of years kind of has your mind trained as on how the whole, but like, they got success with that ball, they just went away from it a little bit, and they're 100% back with it now, and they're letting it go, and they're winning off breaks. And Clare going back to a more traditional style, and Kilkenny are coming away from the more traditional style, isn't it, guys?
You haven't said that. I think they may have been going along with it, but they weren't going along to the type of target man that they would be going.
Maybe not, yeah.
And they were, I suppose, if we were to use a basketball term that we use, they were more working the bunch and break off at the square and leaving space on the outside, and they had very, very quick, skillful players to be able to play that game. So the diagonal ball or the ball up the wing, it was very difficult to defend against, and obviously was very, very successful for them. I think they are going back to a little bit more of a traditional game now, but it's still, the principle is still the same, you know, quality, quick, skillful players working off the shoulder, working off the breaks and getting the scores.
Yeah, the bunch and break. Brian Cody be pulling his hair out listening to this kind of terminology. He's going to have to embrace it. He's going to have to move with the times. There's now bunching and breaking in hurling. The hurling snobs will be losing their minds. Cork Waterford, lads. Waterford in big trouble. And actually, the noise coming out of Waterford, well, I commented a lot about Derek McGrath not really seeming to care in his post-match interviews. Not that he didn't care, but he was kind of relaxed about it. He wasn't relaxed the last day. He said he expected a big performance, yeah. They wanted it and they didn't get it, so you know, maybe this relaxed attitude, will he be regretting it, but he needs a performance pretty quickly.
Yeah, you'd be hoping there would be a reaction out of these Watford players as well, especially if they target Kilkenny game and they were poor, like they didn't score, they scored 12.12, they got a goal in the last couple of minutes, so very, very poor return from the far line as well. So I expect a reaction out of this Watford team as well, because again, have their main players there as well. I know Brick Welsh is missing all right now, but the rest of the big guys have been there, that were there the last couple of years as well, so it's time for them to actually stand up now and actually prove what they're worth, because if they don't, you'd be very worried about this Waterford thing going forward, because you can't just flip a switch and say, yeah, okay, championship now, we can turn around again, like,
yeah.
But they need some sort of form, like, the league is nearly finished, there's only two games left in the league, so if they don't win this game, like, you know, you need a reaction now and they need a performance now more than anything. Like, if they do have the performance, they might win the game, but without the performance they're not going to win the game, so they need a solid performance in this Waterford team.
Yeah, Dan Shanahan actually was trying to be positive about it, and he says two wins could easily get you into a quarter final, so they're not giving up even hope on that, but again, he's like, we need to see some, yeah. You wouldn't be banking on them at the moment the way they're playing.
I think there's a couple of things. I think if you look at Waterford's scoring statistics in the earlier games, you know, they haven't been great, and I think the other thing that you need to look at is, you know, Munster Championship is going to be savage competitive this year, so it would make sense to you know, keep yourself fresh for that. But it might make sense if you've lost a lot of your confidence and self belief at that stage. And you know, Waterford are a little bit different than Galway. Galway have an All Ireland, and you know, in the bag now, and they're able to call on that experience and that confidence. Waterford don't; they still have to get over the line on that. So look, I think it's a risk that Derek has taken. But I do think they do need to improve a lot from here on in, particularly the level of intensity that they bring to the game and the performance that they bring to the game. They may not win the game against Cork. It's in Páirc Chaoimh. Cork also had a poor day the last day in Ennis against Clare, and they're going to have to step up their performance here. And I think they have a few players coming back as well. I think Mark Coleman's back from injury next Sunday. So look, that would make a big difference to them. So look, I just think that Cork, you know, both teams need to up their performance. I think Cork, because games in Páirc Chaoimh, Cork will do it. Might be much in it, but I will expect Waterford to improve a lot and just show signs that, you know, to have the ability to step back up to the performances they were at last year.
Yeah, we've talked about Galway and Dublin. We'd probably fancy Galway there and Limerick to beat Antrim. So I'll give the last word to you, Cheddar, on Laois Offaly. And this is a huge, huge game, because you fancy Galway to beat Dublin to be on only on 2 points. Then if Laois can beat Offaly, they're both on 4, and Laois have a great chance. You know what I mean? A great chance. This is a massive game between Laois and Offaly, to see who can potentially get into a quarter final here.
Yeah, it is huge for both, really, I suppose.
For both, yeah.
Laois are a very young team, sort of still in development stage, really. Offaly have a lot of experienced players back, and you know, they're a hardened outfit as such. And you know, I said the last day that Kevin Martin, they will definitely be playing for Kevin Martin. Games in Tullamore as well. I think the other interesting thing is, you know, Laois have a much better score and difference than Dublin, and you know, it is a little bit risky for Dublin at the minute, going down the wire here in terms of Division 1B and matches that are coming up, because you know, if Laois were to beat Offaly and beat Dublin, you know, Dublin are on 2 points in the last game, and you know, that can eat away at a team, and you know, it can cause a lot of noise in dressing rooms and that. So you know, I think Pat, you know, may have liked to have found out things about his team and found out things about his players, and we've discussed this earlier on. But on the other side of that, there's a risk as well that, you know, belief in the team and belief in a management team, you know, might ebb a little bit away if they don't get some wins in. So look, back to the point, it's going to be a cracking game. I think Laois, you know, Laois have beaten Offaly as often as Offaly has beaten Laois in the last couple of years, and certainly the Indian sign that Offaly had over Laois is not there anymore. So you know, you're going into the game believing that you can win the game, which is really, really important. I thought Laois were sharp against Antrim, should have won, you know, probably made it a little bit easier on themselves, missed a few goals, missed a few points. I know Antrim did too, but could have made it a little bit easier for themselves. And look, no more than JJ, I'll never vote against my own county here, but actually at the minute I just think that they have maybe a little bit more hurling about, a little bit more quickness to win the game on Sunday.
Yeah, well listen, fingers crossed that they will. And even if they lose, I have a feeling if they beat Dublin in the last game that they'll make the quarterfinals anyways if Dublin lose to Galway. Yeah, so like I said, the two chances to do
great incentives. Yeah,
great incentives, and it'd be great to get into a quarterfinal against one of the bigger teams. Right, listen, that's all we've time for, lads. I'm pretty sure we've gone over time on this one, but we'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.